Welcome once again to the Leadership Journey podcast, or welcome for the first time, if this is the first time that you've tuned into the podcast. My name is Alan Wilson. I am the host of the podcast. And this week is a little different. We're not actually going to be looking at the particular story of any current leader, but we're going to be delving back into the story of one of the biblical leaders. And helping me to explore this story on this podcast is Pauline, my wife. She's been on the podcast before when we explored the life of Moses, and she's back today. So welcome, Pauline. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
We'll maybe get you to tell your story some of these days in all of this. Why not? Why not? Yeah, I think people would be very interested to hear that. In fact, you're just not saying anything at the minute. So, in fact, I think we'll do that at some point.
We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll
see. Of course we will. Yeah. Well, you're going to be asking the questions today, and I'm going to do a bit more of the talking.
Yeah, so we're looking at Nehemiah as a leader. Now, first, you probably want to say that the Bible, and indeed the book of Nehemiah, is not primarily a book about leadership.
Yep, that's right. And I think that's important. You know, it's fairly well documented, and it's fairly obvious to anybody with an interest in the subject that there's a lot of interest in the subject of leadership. And I think the church is not an exception to that. The trends that are in the culture in terms of the increased interest in leadership are very much in the church as well. And sometimes what the church does is simply goes to what's been said in the secular world and says, well, we'll just apply that in there. Or sometimes what the church does is to maybe overdo the idea that, well, the Bible is a kind of a leadership book. So, you know, 17 principles from the life of Jesus about how to be a better leader, or that kind of thing. I do think there's things we can learn from the Bible in terms of leadership, not least in the portrayals of the leaders, or there's a lot more to it than that. But I think when we do that, we need to be very careful that we don't somehow reduce the stories to be just about leadership for what we get out of them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But having said that, there are rich lessons to be learned. We did look at Moses before, and now we're looking at Nehemiah. Maybe, though, before we get into Nehemiah, could you tell us the difference between vision and mission in leadership?
The way I would put it is mission is the present tense. Why does this organization exist? What is this organization doing? So an organization like Habitat for Humanity, for example, I can't remember their mission statement off the top of my head, but it'll probably be something like, our mission is to provide affordable housing for everybody, or something like that.
Right.
A vision, on the other hand, I think has a future element to it. It's in a way a picture of what could happen if the organization stays true to its mission. So at some point in the future, and again, I go back to Habitat for Humanity, and again, I don't remember the wording off the top of my head, but they're probably going to say, our vision is a world where everybody has a house to live in, something like that. So a vision describes something that's not yet, but it's where the organization is hoping to see come about, whereas a mission is, here's what we're doing at the minute.
Okay, that's helpful. So for Nehemiah, what was his vision? How did he get a vision in the first place?
Well, obviously Nehemiah never actually says to us that, I have a dream of a restored city of Jerusalem. But I think we can imply lots of things. I mean, certainly he has this great sense of purpose, and the way it comes about, I mean, we're going back to a time that is towards the end of the era of the Old Testament.
Right.
So it's after the exile. It's about 450 years before Christ. Jerusalem has been destroyed by the Babylonians. Lots of people have been taken off into exile in Babylon. You've got prophets who've prophesied about that, like Jeremiah, for example, that the exile wouldn't be forever. People have begun to go back, and as they've gone back, they've started to try to rebuild the city. Nehemiah, meantime, is still at the heart of the empire, which is now the Persian Empire rather than the Babylonian Empire.
Okay.
He's there, and he has risen to the ranks of the king's cupbearer. He has a visit from one of his brothers, a man by the name of Hanani. And Hanani comes along, and Nehemiah says, well, you know, tell me what's happening in Jerusalem at the moment. How are things going for the people who've survived the exile? The news that Hanani brings is bad. People are discouraged and despondent. The city is ruined, and it's actually something of a reproach.
A reproach to him?
Well, I think to the whole notion of this is the city of God, this is the nation of the people of God, they're a laughing stock. This is not at all what the Psalms describe as the city of the great king. And there were these prophetic expectations of a great city of Jerusalem, and they were a long way short of that. So when Nehemiah hears that, he's just reduced to a state of utter brokenness at what has happened. And it drives him to pray, prayer, fasting, mourning, before he does anything. And I think it's in that process, it seems to run for about 4 months, it's in that process of prayer, of humbling himself before God, of confessing sin, but yet at the same time of holding on to the promises of God, because God had said, you know, if you sin, I'll scatter you, but if you come back, I'll restore you again. And that gave him a degree of boldness. But during all of that, he uses the expression himself. I think it's in chapter 2 where he says that God had put something into his heart. God was putting a plan into his heart for Jerusalem. So suppose in our, you know, from our frame of reference, we would say the vision of Nehemiah was a restored city of Jerusalem.
Right. And, excuse me, it came about through his heart being broken, but then God using that, and through prayer, really through an extended time of prayer, I suppose the vision began to clarify.
Absolutely. I think that's right. On one of the previous podcasts, we interviewed with Harold Miller, and I think I talked about this actually in an even earlier podcast, but Harold Miller had spoken to me about this idea of Popeye moments,
right?
Where Popeye decides that he's going to deal with Bluto, and the expression "I can't stand it, I can't stand it no more," and he downs the spinach and develops muscles, and off he goes. And you know, I think there's a certain type of leadership that has those kind of Popeye moments where you're looking at something and saying, do you know, there's something that is so wrong about this situation that we cannot just settle for it being like this.
Right.
Something has got to be done.
Right.
And that could be, you know, it could be a church leader, could be church leaders listening to the podcast thinking, do you know, my church is not everything that it should be. Mm-hmm. You know, I think back to the interview with David McClay, or one of the interviews with David McClay, who talked about his conviction that the church should thrive. You know, and if we think about, you know, the gospel that we have, if we really believe it, and if we really believe that God's among us by his Spirit, well, probably many of our churches could be thriving much, much more than they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some leaders, that may be the Popeye moment, as you said, you know, right enough, if we've got all of these resources in God, we're not what we should be. So we need to do something about it. But that heart of brokenness is an important thing, and that's probably hard to manufacture.
Yes, I was just going to ask you, it seems to me that maybe this is countercultural in terms of leadership, because in the secular world, maybe we are encouraged to look for our vision, to form our vision. But it seems to me that you're saying we need to be thinking, we need to be praying, we need to be allowing God to break our hearts, and then the vision comes.
Yeah, I think that's definitely how it is here. It's not just a question of my resourcefulness, of coming superficially to a problem. And I think the most powerful visions are going to be the visions that are probably come from the deepest places in the leader's heart. And I think with Nehemiah, I think Nehemiah is a very impressive character. There's times in his leadership when he has to be decisive, and he is decisive. There's times in his leadership when he has to be very strong. So he's I'm not recommending this, but he's beating people up. He's pulling out their hair.
Yeah. I'm glad you're not recommending it.
not recommending it to New Testament leaders. But he's a powerful, decisive leader. And yet there is this very deep heart. In fact, he prays, I forget, it's many times in the book of Nehemiah, maybe it's 9 times that it says about Nehemiah, about him praying. So there's very much a heart towards God, and there's that very deep heart that's broken. You know, all of which I think leads, you know, really leads to a leadership question, which is, well, what needs to be done?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for listeners to this particular episode of the podcast, I think that's a question for you to, you know, maybe you want to hit pause at the moment as you listen. If you're out walking, just hit the pause button, keep walking for a while. And think about that, you know, in your sphere of influence, what is so wrong that needs to be put right? And what is there that needs to be done? And then to start talking to God about that and allow God to give you that sort of deep heart. You know, as I'm talking about this, there's another idea that's coming to mind, and it's from... I'm going to get my wires crossed a little bit here because it takes us back to Moses, but it's actually from a book by Dan Allender called Leading with a Limp.
Okay.
And he talks about Moses and the whole concept of the loss of the vision. And I know when I talked earlier about some of my research, I talked about the crucible of setbacks and the crucible of isolation.
Yeah.
And in the Moses story, which we've talked about before, there is that middle phase of Moses' life, which is the wilderness phase. And Dan Allender says that there are times when, you know, the leader's dream has to die,
right,
so that God can create a deep soul,
mm-hmm,
and out of that implant his vision. And I think that's all part of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe sometimes our own visions that we're too quick to have, our quick solutions,
mm-hmm,
need to be set aside or pushed aside.
Yes.
So that an authentic vision comes from God and, mm-hmm, and it becomes deep in our hearts.
Sure. That may be like Moses, that time in the wilderness does that.
Yeah.
So Nehemiah, his heart is broken, he's praying, a vision begins to emerge, and then how does he put legs on that, if you like?
Well, he seems to combine this amazing ability to be a big picture person, but also a person who thinks of detail. So eventually, after 4 months of praying, when he's talking to the king, who's his employer, because he's the king's cupbearer, you know, he's sad. He's got this, what the king describes as sadness of heart. King's like almost like an amateur psychologist. Well, you know, what's wrong with you? This is sickness of heart or sadness of heart.
Mm-hmm.
Nehemiah is worried. Actually, as far as we know from the history of this, King Artaxerxes, who was Nehemiah's boss, had previously put a stop to rebuilding work in Jerusalem.
Right.
So in some ways, the problem that Nehemiah was broken over was actually a problem to which Artaxerxes had contributed.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, perhaps understandably, doubtless understandably, he's a bit anxious when the king notices, mm-hmm, this sadness. But he prays and comes out with it and says, well, you know, the city of my ancestors is in ruins. The king says, what would you like to do? You'd like to go back to rebuild it? How long will you be gone? And so on. And what becomes clear then is that Nehemiah has actually thought about a lot of the detail. So
yeah,
he knows he's going to need letters of permission to get safe passage through certain areas. He knows he's going to need timber to build the gates and so on. So there's a degree of planning. And then he gets... you know, I think to give the whole thing legs, there's that degree of planning. But at the end of the day, to give the whole thing legs, he needs people who are going to do the work.
Right.
And he's going, I think we need to remember this, he's going down to a city where people are demoralised.
Mm-hmm.
They've probably got used to living among the ruins.
Mm-hmm.
There probably are exceptions like Hanani who are sad, broken, probably all saddened by it. But it's one of those things that we become accustomed to a reality, even if the reality is less than perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It just becomes the new norm.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going down to people who are probably very demoralised. And his task then becomes, how is he going to mobilise them and get them up and building?
Mm-hmm.
Which you get at the end of chapter 2. It's an interesting little... I think it's a masterclass on what contemporary writers would think of as vision casting.
Right. So how does he get those people around him?
Well, first thing he does is he goes down and really doesn't do anything, mm-hmm, for a while. And it was a journey of several hundred miles, so he would have been quite tired. Doesn't do anything. And then before he talks to anybody there, he gets up and he goes and has a look at it,
mm-hmm,
to see what the situation is on the ground. He then says to the people, He says, you see the mess that we are in.
Right.
Let us rise up and build.
He it's tells, interesting that he says that we are in.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. He could have said, if he was a consultant, mm-hmm. he would come down and say, I see the mess that you are mm-hmm. in.
He's like Daniel. He identifies with the people.
He does, mm-hmm. which he has also done in his prayer because mm-hmm. He's identified with the people's sin.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose the difference between a leader and a consultant is a consultant might say, I see the mess that you're in. Mm-hmm. Here's what you need to do. Nehemiah, who's a leader, says, you see the mess that we are in.
Right.
Here's what we need to do.
Right.
And so he mobilizes them, and the people are encouraged when he's told them that God's been with them. It's always good to tell stories, I think, mm-hmm. of how God has been with us.
Yeah.
That breathes new courage into people.
Mm-hmm.
He tells them that. The people say, yep, we're going to rise up and build. And off they go. And chapter 3, which is one of those chapters that we probably struggle to read because there's so many names in it and we don't know who... I was going to say who the half of them are, but that would be generous. We really don't know who these people are.
Yeah.
And there's a massive list of names. All kinds of people. Perfume makers. They're the ones that really, they always stand out to me because I imagine that requires a certain amount of delicacy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there they are putting walls back together again.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of people. And they all get on this task, and it's amazingly well organized. So chapter 3 is actually arranged in a very specific way, starting at the north of the city, near where the temple would have been.
Mm-hmm.
The sheep gate, I think, was the first one. And working their way down one side and then the way back up the other side. And it's all organized so that each section of the wall is built by specific people. And I think it's an amazing feat of organization. They do it very quickly as well. They mm-hmm. get the whole thing built within 52 days. So he brings that ability, not just to have a vision, but also to have a specific plan
right.
as to how this vision's going to look. And then he is able to mobilize people.
And how does he do that? How does he get those people who were... perhaps a bit reluctant or not used to this kind of thing or maybe didn't see the vision to begin with? How does he do that?
I think probably a good bit of it has to be, he comes down and he tells them that God has been with them.
Yeah.
You know, God's been with them. Is there a charisma to it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there is. Was there anything in the fact that, here's a man who's come all the way from Persia
mm-hmm.
Down here. It's interesting. They don't say, well, who do you think you are?
No.
You know, you've come all the way down here. You think you're going to be an expert. He obviously has inspected the place, so he knows mm-hmm. what he's talking about. But I suppose the thing I'd most like to latch on to is this idea that he says to them, the good hand of God has been mm-hmm. on me. You know, mm-hmm. this is what the king has said. This is the permission that I've got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a momentum here yeah. of God moving.
Yeah.
And I guess leaders who are able to do that and say, God's on the move and we have the opportunity to be part of that, mm-hmm. That's the great motivation.
It is, and it makes it a very exciting thing to be a part of. But then, practically speaking, he breaks it down into manageable portions.
Yes, he does.
So
that's
that
right. That's
people
right.
can see, yeah, I can do this bit.
Yeah, that's
I can't
good.
Do the whole bit, but I can do this bit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Because if he just said, right, well, let's go and rebuild the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It was too much for one person. Mm-hmm. And if it hadn't been organized,
mm-hmm.
you know, the whole crowd of them together couldn't have done mm-hmm. it. That's very true. So he gets his team on side.
He gets his team. Okay, well then, how do they keep going? I mean, leaders need to be resilient.
They do.
And that's always a challenge, you know. It's one thing to get going and to get started and to get motivated. How do you keep going?
Yeah, can I just go back a second? Because
mm-hmm.
I think before we leave the people who helped him, the team, I think my second question then to leaders who are listening,
mm-hmm.
If the first question is, what needs to be done?
Right.
The second question is, who is going to help you
right,
to do it?
Right.
And again, you know, pause mm-hmm. the recording if you want, and ask yourself, look around you and ask who's there. If you're the leader, how are you mobilizing those people? How are you communicating vision to them?
Mm-hmm.
how are you empowering them to get on with bits?
Right.
You know, leaders have got to empower the people that they lead. Mm-hmm. It's a mistake when leaders want to hold on to all the power
right.
themselves. So who's your team? How are you envisioning them, if that's a word? How are you empowering them? How are you mobilizing them? How are you pointing them to where God is working in the situation?
Great.
And then again, so the next thing then, how do they keep going?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and this is going to be the third question then for leaders. So in anticipation, what are the obstacles that you're going to have to overcome
right.
in order to see the task through? Yeah, I mean, I think leadership is not just a question of saying to a group of people, okay, here's a glorious vision, and then watching everybody rise up and follow it. If it was as simple as that, it's just not as simple as that. And I think leaders, I've got to be prepared that it's going to be more. There's going to be more than that. It's going to be much, much harder work than that. That it's important work to do that, but there's going to be hard work involved that goes beyond that. And the pattern that emerges then, there are hints of this at the end of chapter 2, and it begins to develop more in chapter 4, and on through into chapter 5 and chapter 6. There are problems that Nehemiah has to deal with. Broadly speaking, I think maybe that they fall into three areas. One is the one that emerges in chapter 4 is that there's a sort of coalition of adversaries.
Mm-hmm.
And the picture that builds is a picture that these people are local leaders who live on all four sides of the city of Jerusalem.
Okay.
So Sanballat the Horonite is one, Tobiah the Ammonite is another, Geshem the Arab. These people, their territories were on various sides of the city of Jerusalem. They were not interested in seeing a strong Jerusalem that would stand on its own feet and be distinct from any control they might have had over it. So there's the opposition that comes from the outside. Chapter 5 has problems that he, as a leader, has to overcome in that there are members of the community who are exploiting the situation for their own ends. It seemed that the rich were exploiting the poor. There were issues of interest payments, of children having to be sold into slavery and these kinds of things. And Nehemiah has to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in chapter 6, it's back to the Sanballat, Tobiah axis. But I think the emphasis changes somewhat in that the focus of their attack seems to be on getting Nehemiah out of the way.
Okay.
You know, attempting to either distract him or intimidate him or remove him in some way or other. And I think each of those, you know, are worth time. People can reflect a little bit more on this. There are issues that come from outside mm-hmm. of the organization. So the kind of attacks they begin with just ridicule.
Right.
You know, it's kind of, well, what on earth do you think you're doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, that wall is so pathetic that a fox could knock it down.
Mm-hmm.
And at times, one of the things that leaders will have to deal with is this, what's thrown at them that's almost saying, what you're doing is futile.
Right.
You know?
Irrelevant.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's mm. meaningless. You're out in the fringes of society. Mm-hmm. You're just a mad little group, you know?
Right.
Why do you bother?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost that it's almost that kind of thing. It becomes more serious when there's actually threat of physical attack on them. And I think we do well to remember that, you know, there are people around the world for whom it is physically dangerous to be a Christian.
Absolutely.
And also in the mix, there's the simple fact that there's so much rubble that needs to be picked up. There's so much work to do. And, you know, again, leaders will go through those seasons, maybe even seasons of burnout,
mm-hmm.
Where there's just so much to be done, and
it's overwhelming.
It is. It's overwhelming, and that, you know, people were saying the strength of the builders is the strength of the laborers is running low, and also at that same time there were actually Jews who you would have thought ought to have been supportive of the project.
Right.
And they're saying, oh, you should come back to us, come back mm-hmm. to us, you know, and, you know, they repeat it several times. And it's, you kind of think, well, hang on, you should really be encouraging this work here. The detail is that they were living in communities outside of Jerusalem. Probably their neighbours were hostile to the project, and they were becoming under pressure and coming in and saying, look, life would be an awful lot easier if you would just lay off this building project. Mm-hmm. But I think there's that thing of voices from within the community,
right,
or from within the organisation, mm-hmm, that actually become the most discouraging voices. Yes. And that's a tough one, mm-hmm, for a leader. Sometimes it's even personal.
Yeah.
And you know, where a leader has to deal with, mm-hmm, you know, rejection, or you know, somebody doesn't want them in that leadership, mm-hmm, position.
It's very disheartening.
Absolutely, and it can, you know, it really does call for resilience. I think it calls for a clear sense of God's call.
Yes.
In it all as well.
So how did Nehemiah handle all of this?
Well, he handled it partly with prayer, mm-hmm, and partly with, you know, I suppose, good common sense military solutions. Mm-hmm. So he, you know, in terms of in chapter 4, you know, they've got people who are working on the walls. So they've got like a trowel in one hand and a sword in the other.
Yeah.
So there's that. I think in terms of the things that were directed against him personally, well, he refused to be intimidated, and he, mm-hmm, had an insight that allowed him to see through, mm-hmm, and not to be distracted. And I think the chapter 5 thing, one of the things that I like about the way that story unfolds is in the chapter 5 thing, Nehemiah actually exemplifies part of the solution to what he's asking people to do. This is not a time to exploit, this is a time to serve one another. Mm. And Nehemiah makes the point that he entertains people, and he's got quite a lavish diet, you know, of, right, all this food and drink that they consume. But he makes the point of saying, look, I'm providing this at my own cost here, my own expense. And I think that's a great example of servant leadership. Mm-hmm. Servant leadership is not someone who is merely a doormat, mm-hmm, who has no real opinion and just gets pushed around, then it wouldn't be a leader if that's what they were like. Right. A servant leader is someone who leads, and Nehemiah leads with great clarity, mm-hmm, but they lead not for themselves, mm-hmm, but for the benefit of the people that they lead,
right,
and ultimately as Christian leaders for the glory of God.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that brings us to the third question then. Mm-hmm. What are the obstacles that I, you know, as a leader, I may need to overcome? You know, is it discouragement? Is it opposition? Is it ridicule? You know, is it personal attempts to distract, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And again, hit the pause button for a moment and ask yourself, what are some of those obstacles that you're going to have to overcome, and how are you going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those are the three questions, really, I think, from Nehemiah.
Great. Do you want to just summarise those three questions so,
okay,
that people finishing up can take them with them?
Yeah, okay, I'll summarise the questions. Number one is, what needs to be done? And that has to do with your task, your vision, your sense of mission. Number two, who is going to do this with you? And that has to do with your team, mm-hmm, communicating the vision to them, empowering them, and encouraging them, and motivating them.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to do that? Who is there? You know, take a moment to identify them. Who are they? And then number three, what are the obstacles, both to the work but also to yourself?
Mm-hmm.
What are the obstacles that you're going to have to deal with in order to persevere? And how are you going to cultivate resilience,
mm-hmm,
in all of that, mm-hmm, in order to keep going?
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining me today, and guiding us through the story of Nehemiah.
Pleasure.
Well, you've been listening to the Leadership Journey podcast. I'm Alan Wilson. I'm normally the host of the podcast. I suppose I was the host of the podcast today, but I had a co-host as we talked our way through Nehemiah. Thank you for taking time to tune in, and we will be back next week with some more on the Leadership Journey, and look forward to talking to you then.